When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome back, guys. Another episode of Fistful of Collars. Today, we have got a very, very busy day. We're going to be talking about a ton of stuff. The IBJJF Heavyweight Grand Prix, ADCC implications, rankings, upcoming events, and a lot of other stuff, including some major, major names ahead of ADCC. We've got some great content coming out. But let's dive in, because we've got a big show today. We've got a lot of stuff to discuss. Chase and Mike here in the studio with myself, Howell. And I think the first point of order, we should really talk about the IBJJF Heavyweight Nogi Grand Prix. And we've talked about it a lot, right? But
Uncle Cyborg, king of the day, man. Still out there.
I love that. He's the one who coined that name, by the way, right? I interviewed him just as he was holding there his $40,000, you know, oversized check. And he's like, yeah, Uncle Cyborg, coming to show the young guys still got it. It's an amazing performance, right, Mike?
Yeah, amazing. And it was really interesting seeing, you know, ahead of ADCC how it was an IBJJF tournament, but guys were sort of going out there with an ADCC game plan. I believe Pans and Trator were the only people who jumped guard the entire tournament. It was a lot of wrestling, which you don't usually see IBJJF Nogi, so it was a nice little preview for ADCC there.
Yeah, we've got a really, really cool highlight from the Heavyweight Nogi Grand Prix that we can play kind of as we're talking about it. We'll roll that in the background. But going back to Cyborg 1 second, I want to, you know, we talked about this a number of times this past week, but it's worth mentioning again and again that Cyborg is 39 this year. He's 39. That put him a full 10 years older than the next guy, which is Louis Panzer, who is 29. So he's going in there. He's 12 years older at the minimum than two of his opponents, João Gabriel and Lucas Hulk, both 27, and Victor Hugo's only 22.
Wow.
And yet Cyborg, the veteran, you know, goes in there and he wipes the floor with these guys.
Yeah, I thought that the most impressive moment of that entire tournament was really when the tide turned in the Lucas Hulk match with Cyborg. You know, Cyborg was down by 4 points, didn't get discouraged, and managed to come back. He started stopping Lucas's single leg that had worked earlier in the match, and you could see Lucas start to get a little bit discouraged, started getting a little bit tired, and Cyborg slowly ramped up the pace, got some takedown points via penalty, and you could just see the whole momentum and tempo of that match change. It was such like a inspiring thing to see, because he was down, but it did not break him.
Yeah, like I said, we got the highlight playing here, so you can kind of see a little bit of the action. There's a little bit of each match in there, actually. Let's talk about these real quick. What were the standout matches for you guys?
Well, besides what I just talked about, Mike, anything jump out to you?
Hulk in his matchup with Spriggs looked really good. I mean, that might have even played into him wearing himself out against Cyborg, because he went hard against Spriggs, scored 12 points against Spriggs, and his single legs looked good. I thought Hulk looked good going into ADCC, and obviously the Hulk-Cyborg match. But yeah, those would be the two that stand out to me the most.
I really wish I could have seen Patrick Gaudio go a bit further. It seemed like he was also picking up steam in that first round. But Joao's a tough guy to beat. Obviously, he made the final.
Man, that's a good observation, actually, because Gaudio had possibly the toughest first round match of them all, I would say.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, Gaudio is registered. He's going to be in at the under 99 division, ADCC, and he's going up against ADCC silver medalist João Gabriel, who was by far the biggest man in the bracket. I think he's walking around, he's probably 250-ish, something like that. He's a big, big dude, and Gaudio had his hands full, right? But as you said, like the first kind of portion of the match, he seemed very defensive. I think he was counter-attacking a little bit too much. But when he started pushing the pace a little bit towards the end of the match, like you say, picking up steam, the momentum starting to go in his favor, maybe he's already thinking about those longer ADCC rounds, right?
Yeah, I think Gaudio, he turned it on too late, basically. But an ADCC match can go longer than that. But yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to move Gaudio, too. I mean, it's so hard to move João Gabriel. So big, so much bigger than Gaudio. But yeah, I think Joao Gabriel took the first half. Gaudio probably took the second half, but probably too little too late in the eyes of the judges for, I believe, split ref's decision?
It was a ref's decision, yeah.
Was ref's decision. I do believe it was unanimous.
It was unanimous, okay.
But I think it really speaks to Joao's effective counter wrestling, sitting that. Really.
That sprawl.
Yeah, the sprawl.
The wizard, too. The wizard.
Sprawl and the wizard and the wizard kick, that sort of like a Uchimata style takedown that he throws as a counter. But what I was getting to was Joao kind of. I don't know if he was risking it for the biscuit, as they say, but in his final versus Cyborg, he sprawled and he had all of his weight on top of Cyborg's head. Then he sat back for the guillotine or the headlock, trying to get a sweep. It was a really risky move, and it put Cyborg in a great place. I thought that was kind of interesting. What were you guys' take on that?
I think maybe he's thinking, try and get that, you know, a 0-0. There was no clear winner at that point. Maybe try and get an advantage out of that guillotine and win $40,000. I mean, a lot of money on the line. And if it went to a ref's decision before that guillotine happened, I don't know who's going to take it, but obviously ended up in a bad spot off the guillotine. And
Cyborg really started like bulldozing over that guard as well, right? It kind of looked like he was close to passing once or twice.
Very close.
He's got that nice kind of double over sort of the style of passing.
Pass.
Yeah, but body locking the thighs, smashing the knees together, and then he runs one way and he jumps over to the other side, and he kind of switched directions a couple times on Joao Gabriel. And, you know, if Joao Gabriel's frames weren't as long as they are, then, you know, he might not have been able to hold him off, but he kind of was able to keep Cyborg at distance and just about maintain his guard. But I mean, we saw the guard passing as well. I have to say that one of the standout matches for me was Cyborg versus Victor Hugo. Because the guard passing in that match, now it's crazy because Cyborg scored 5 advantages in that match, and yet, man, I think that was kind of tough. There were a couple of moments in there where I was like, give the man his points.
I thought he had 3 at one point for sure. He had him flattened out, but maybe it was just 2.5 seconds. I don't know. He was pretty close there.
It was a long 2.5 seconds. It was like 1, 2, 2.5, 2 3/4, 3.
Well, refs call it different. A lot of times you get them just stuck flat on their back like that. They just sort of give it out quick. But, yeah, they give Victor Hugo a little time.
I mean, I wasn't upset, though, because it made Cyborg keep pushing the pace. He was moving in that match. I know in the video we put out recently, Cyborg said he was kind of warming up. But that's a fast-paced warm-up, man. He was really going after those passes. And I was equally impressed, I have to say, with Victor Hugo's retention and ability to not quite get scored on by someone like Cyborg. Cyborg is way bigger than Victor Hugo. Super aggressive and intimidating dude. And he managed to sort of... very experienced. Like, you know, that's an understatement of the day. But for Victor to remain calm, collected, and weather those storms to go 0-0 and just have advantages scored on him, I think is a real testament to his talent.
Yeah, 100%. About the implications for ADCC coming out of this tournament, there are a few things for me which really stood out. Number one, I have to say, is that Cyborg cannot be counted out. Mm. Okay? This guy was an absolute champion in 2013, came back, had the super fight against Andre Galvao in 2015, took third place in 2017, and now taking out like a couple of the kind of the big names that everybody was excited to see going into this year's ADCC, you kind of think, wow, Cyborg's still a contender, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, Joao Gabriel has to be considered one of the contenders in that division. I mean, Cyborg, I mean, very close match, but Cyborg beat him. Victor Hugo also is going to be in that bracket, and he took him out. And yeah, I think it would have been easy to write Cyborg off just because he's getting up there in age. And it's been he took third last time, but it's been 2 years since then. He's 39, 37 is a big difference, you know, when you're a high-level athlete. So he goes out there and fights his way through this tournament. He's got to be considered one of the contenders at over 99.
More than that, Yuri Samoyes was supposed to be in this heavyweight GP, also in the plus 99, and pulled out due to injury. He, in my book, was, if he's fully healthy, you know, one of the absolute favorites for that division. But now his status is questionable. Mm. Cyborg's looking better than ever. So I think that was a big shakeup for that division. And I agree, Cyborg's on my short list of guys to hit the podium for sure.
Yeah, I can't stress it enough. You cannot count this man out. And we're going to be there next week, so long as the hurricane doesn't impact our travel plans too much.
Everyone stay safe out there in Florida.
Big yeah, because next week they're saying that Hurricane Dorian apparently is going to hit Miami, and apparently it's the worst hurricane in 30 years. So fingers crossed, because Ryan and Reed are actually scheduled to fly to Miami next week to go film at the Fight Sports ADCC training camp. So let's hope that does happen, but... Just a quick word about that. The ADCC training camp down there, have you seen it? It's freaking insane if you haven't.
Adolfo has recently jumped in.
Let's rattle off some names. Number one, you got Cyborg, and then you got somebody at every single division. They got Tom Halpin at 66, Wagner at 77, Durinho at 88. Gaudio is there training. He's at under 99. Cyborg himself is at over 99. Rodolfo has been training there. You got his sister, Ana Carolina Vieira, who's also qualified for over, or invited to over 60. Muhammad Ali has just shown up to train there as well. He's in the over 99 kilogram division as well. It's like, that's a lot of talent. But Vice Sports actually has a reputation of putting together these amazing ADCC training camps. Because back in 2015, right around the time that he was preparing for his super fight with Galvão, in that room, you had Rodolfo, you had João Gabriel, you had Abraham Marte, you had like a, I think he was a brown belt, Gutenberg Pereira. You had like a ton of really, really good names training in there as well. So, you know, Cyborg's he's got the benefit of training some of the best guys in the world.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. You got guys from TLI, from GF Team, all in the same room training for one single cause. It's pretty cool. I would say it's very unique in the world of Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, I mean, first off, if Ryan and Reed are there during a hurricane, it might be the best vlog yet. We might get an action-packed vlog. But I'm wondering, even though they're not on the same team, I wonder if any gym has that many people doing ADCC competing. Maybe Atos, but they've got, I'm thinking Fight Sports probably has the most ADCC competitors in that training camp.
Yeah, if they got one in every division, yeah, I would say so. And not forgetting as well that there's a bunch of other guys kind of on the periphery. So, example, like Baby Monster, Valdir Araújo. He took second at the ADCC trials in Brazil, so he's there training. Maggie Grindati, she took second at the ADCC trials West Coast here in the States, so she's also there training. So there's a bunch of other guys who they potentially, if anybody drops out, they could actually get a call as like an alternate as well, right?
Absolutely.
Great point.
Strong Matt. Hoping that comes together. But any other implications for ADCC out of that tournament last weekend?
Man, I think we've got to talk about Hulk a little bit because he looked so phenomenal in the first match. You know, and Tim Spriggs, he just rolled over Tim, really. I was shocked at that. But I think he has to be working on some things, on his cardio. You know, matches at ADCC, if he makes the final, could go up to 40 minutes. And he was looking pretty tired by 6 minutes on his second match. So
that's a
warning sign, I think.
Yeah, that is a red flag, 100%. Like, you know, if he was 15 minutes of action deep into what was just 3 10-minute rounds and he was fading that hard, then, yeah, that is a big question. Now, a lot of the time, guys will... they'll periodize their training camp, right?
Yeah, that's true. He might be peaking for ADCC.
Right. Maybe he's just not there yet, you know? Like, so there's a big question mark. But is it enough time for it? Is it enough time for him to take the lessons from that and to apply it so he hits ADCC in peak shape? What do you think?
Another thing I think might be playing into him getting tired there is he's wrestling Cyborg in that second match. He's going to be a weight class up from him there. Cyborg's a big dude, strong dude. You got to wrestle with him, try and hold him down. It's going to wear you out. And also something we haven't mentioned, I think, about this tournament, Victor Hugo, something really impressive about him is he wasn't even there to do the tournament. He was showing up to compete in the Las Vegas Open. And then
in
next
the gi.
Thing, yeah, in the gi. And next thing you know, nope, you got Cyborg first round in the Grand Prix.
And looked pretty good.
Yeah, he looked pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it was kind of shades of Cyborg himself, right? He had like the nice little tornado guard action from bottom.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool, trying to hit Cyborg with his own move.
That was nice. Yeah.
That would have been epic. That would have been really cool.
Yeah. You just mentioned it right there, another kind of implication for ADCC. But personally about Victor Hugo, I know that he was like a last minute replacement. I'm wondering if that is a sign that maybe ADCC is a bit too soon for him. He's only 22. He doesn't have that much no-gi experience compared to these other guys, right?
True.
I mean, I think he's coming from a gi background. He told me he was on the episode of Chasing Greatness a couple weeks ago and that he's just starting to learn some heel hooks, get more comfortable with that stuff. So clearly he's not a front runner for the division, but I think it's he's super young. He just got his black belt, and it's an incredible opportunity to get those minutes on the match at ADCC and set him up for maybe a following championship to really perform well. He's already beaten some high-level guys like Ricardo Evangelista at black belt.
So this in the gi.
So I think just getting more experience, getting out there, it really puts him in a great place for the upcoming tournaments.
I got to say, you mentioned red flag there with Hulk and the cardio in the semifinal. Another red flag for me is that Tim Spriggs' first match against Hulk. Tim looked amazing at the North American trials in November last year. But November is a long time ago, and he hasn't really competed that much since, you know, a handful of matches here and there. And kind of, you know, he was the no-gi world champion in December last year, but since then, this in 2019 I'm talking, hasn't been as active. And the red flag for me is Tim preparing for ADCC in an adequate manner? Because I'm wondering who he's training with. If Muhammad is going to be in fight sports, who does that leave him to train with? You know, you got DJ Jackson, who's another TLI guy who's at ADCC. But, you know, DJ's a weight class or two down from Tim, right? Mm-hmm. Tim's in at under 99. And I don't know if Tim is struggling that much against somebody like Hulk, who is in his same division, by the way. These guys could, you know, theoretically meet at ADCC. Then it doesn't bode well, right?
Yeah, you got to wonder. It's pretty rare to see that level or that amount of points put on the board at an elite level like that.
We'll call it what it is. It was a shutout.
Yeah, it was a shutout, kind of a blowout. You got to wonder if he's a little bit injured or something wasn't quite right. Maybe his travel's off. Like, it's very unusual for two high-level competitors to have that much of a disparity in the score. So that's where my mind went, was like something wasn't quite right. I don't know. I'm putting a lot out there. Maybe I'm reading too much into the situation. Could have just had a bad day, bad breakfast or something. But clearly something didn't look right.
Yeah, got mounted. I mean, how often do you see that at high-level black belt competition? It's not very common.
And, especially in Nogi.
Yeah, Nogi. Like you said, I mean, they might have to fight in a month. So, I mean, back to the drawing board. You got to try and figure out how he's going to beat Hulk if he comes across him at ADCC.
What do you think about Joao Gabriel?
Man, Joao Gabriel finds his way to the final every time.
Yeah.
And has a hard time finishing on top. You know, I think whatever dog he's got to find, whatever the why he needs to search for, he's got to create that before ADCC, because I feel like, I don't know if the pressure gets to him or what, but he just doesn't seem to get it when he needs to in the final.
I'd like to see more offense out of him. He's a great counter wrestler. He throws guys with that whizzer. He sprawls on guys. But, I mean, I'd like to see him push the pace a little more. Because, I mean, what? He went the ref's decision with Gaudio. Went the ref's decision with Cyborg. The tour match was advantages.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much scoring out of him
in
this tournament.
Last minute advantage as well, right?
But actually, I got to say, though, I think the Trattor, the score doesn't really reflect the match quite so well. Because, like, Trattor actually did a really, really good job of not getting scored on, and like, that is a big man to be passing your guard. And like, Trattor was really, really good at, this is Vinicius Ferreira, of course, he was really, really good at being able to get to his knees and to avoid those pass points, but yeah, pretty crazy. So, but ADCC implications are obviously they're right there for the heavyweight Grand Prix. It was a tune-up for those guys. It was something of a warm-up, but at the same time, it was an excellent preview for us as well as to what to expect, right? And I don't know, can only stoke the fire of my anticipation for ADCC.
I think we all said it at the tournament, like, man, that was a great appetizer. Like, I cannot wait for ADCC. Seeing these guys pretty fired up and looking in a phenomenal shape, it was just like a small taste of what's coming in 4 weeks from now. It's really not that far away.
I'll say, though, I mean, there was some great action at the Grand Prix, but you got to remember who's in their division at ADCC. Marcus Buchecha. I didn't see anything at anybody, no offense. I didn't see anything at anybody that makes me think they're going to take down Buchecha. When it comes to ADCC, I mean, that guy's so athletic, so strong, such a good wrestler that I don't know if any of them are going to be able to. I mean, if they're going to go at it with that strategy that was going to a bunch of 0-0 refs decisions, I mean, Buchecha's going to bring it. Buchecha's going to be going to war, so it's going to be tough.
I hear that. Speaking of ADCC, we got a little bit of ADCC news. It seems that nonstop, just constant changes in the roster and the lineup. But one really big notable one that happened the last couple of days was the news that Nicky Ryan has dropped back down to 66 kilos because his teammate, Ethan Krellenston, who was qualified at 66 kilos, has pulled out with injury. So Nicky, who's been playing musical chairs with the division somewhat, he was in at 66 after winning the West Coast Trials. Then he moved up to 77 because he's like, oh, I'm getting too big, and people are saying that he's not going to be able to hit 145 pounds anymore. So he's actually gone back down to replace Ethan, who's pulled out with the injury. And who slid in at 77 kilos to replace Nicky? None other than Gary G-Dog Tonan.
G-Dog. Oh, no. I'm beyond excited to see Gary back in grappling competition. He's born for ADCC, as far as I'm concerned. He's got a great style. But it's a really smart tactical move for Nicky to drop down to 66 kilos. I think that division is wide open. He holds wins over, like, Gio Martinez, who, in my mind, was one of the front runners. But now this throws a little bit of question into that. So I think it's a big move. It's a big shakeup for the divisions.
Yeah, I think you're right. I got to say, I wonder if Nicky was maybe hedging his bets that a spot would open up at 66. Because after Cabrinha pulled out and Kennedy came in, it threw that whole division into disarray, right? And I believe that there's only a handful of guys who even won trials are actually in that division, right?
Three guys from the trials.
Three.
Left. And I mean, there's
three
a lot,
out of 16.
There's a lot of names in here. A lot of people you recognize, but I don't know who you would pick. I mean, with no Cambrino, who you would pick as the favorites? Like, if you had to pick a top tier of maybe two or three guys in this division, who do you think you're going to go with here? I mean, probably Paulo Tanquinho, and then I don't know. There's a lot of question marks there.
There are a lot of question marks. Actually, it's very telling as well, the state of the 66-kilogram division, by the fact that after guys were pulling out and a lot of people pulled out, that they started inviting podium finishers from the trials as opposed to simply big names or trials winners. So that's how guys such as Richard Alarcon and Tai Ruotolo managed to get on the card. Keith Krikorian. These are guys who all medaled at the ADCC trials, but they didn't win. Right? Mm. But they got their shot because of the amount of changes in that division. So
I appreciate that mentality. You know, like Keith, as you mentioned, he took, I believe, double silver. He was close twice. And instead of opting for maybe a bigger name, I mean, they're all in there now at this point. But, you know, they gave the guy a shot who really worked for it. So I really am happy with the way that things have shaped up. You know, I'm going to miss Cabrinha and Ethan and, of course, the others that have dropped out. But still, very intriguing division and a lot of exciting matchups at this point.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask you guys a question. So, given the withdrawal of Cabrinha at 66 and the current landscape with only four trials winners and a number of invited guys, and as we said, a number of guys who were podium finishers at trials but not even trials winners, who's the number one seed in that bracket?
I think Paulo for sure. He took third last time. Right? He only lost to Cabrinha last time, took third last time. I think you got to seed Paulo number one.
Yeah, it seems like a fair choice. I think Tanquinho could do really well as well. I don't know how high they would rank him, but I think he would be up there.
Yeah, Tanquinho.
I wonder if AJ Agazam's kicking himself now.
Yeah, true.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he was in, and then he withdrew because he has a Bellator, or he had the offer of a Bellator fight, and I believe it was actually in LA, like right around the same period, and he's like, oh, I'm going to do MMA instead.
Hey, it's a long 4 weeks. Who knows what might happen next?
You never know, right? Yeah. If his MMA opponent pulls out and they can't get him another one, and he's already dropping weight for that, maybe he does ADCC, but, you know, otherwise he's going to have to wait a full 2 years for another crack at ADCC, and who knows whether the door will be open for him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Pablo Mantovani is in there, too, who made the semifinals last time. Remember, he knocked off Tanquinho last time, made the semifinals and lost to AJ.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, he's another guy.
You know, for me, 66 kilos is one of those divisions that there are very few clear favorites, but there are a lot of dark horses.
A lot of interesting early matchups, too. You look through here, Gio Martinez, Jamil, Gianni, all these guys are names. There's going to be a lot of interesting first and second round matchups in that bracket.
If you had to pick one match you wanted to see, what would you guys choose?
Whew. That's a good question.
I mean, I think it's going to...
I want to see Nicky versus Kennedy Maciel rematch.
Yep,
that's
yep.
a good one.
I think
that's
we all think in that one.
I think people forget that even happened, right?
That's a long time ago, 2016.
When was that? End of 2016, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how old is Nicky? I forget.
Is he 17 now?
18.
He's 18, so I don't know. 15,
he would have been, like, right around the
15, 16,
15, 16
his
mark, yeah. And Kennedy was still a purple belt, I believe.
Yeah. And for those of you who haven't seen that match, it was Kennedy kind of one-way traffic. You know, Nicky looked good, but Kennedy played a positional game, passed his guard, I think. I have to watch it back. It's been a long time, but it was definitely a clear win for Kennedy in that match. But 3 years is a super long time, especially in the life of a teenage athlete. So things have changed.
Not a matchup, but somebody I'm looking forward to seeing there is sort of a dark horse is Jamil Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, he's known mostly as a gi guy, right? He's a lasso player.
Man, I've only ever seen, like, in his black belt career, I've only ever seen one no-gi match from Jamil, and that was that special super fight he had at Spider. Which he actually looked really, really good at, I have to say.
What if Jamil just comes out and heel hooks everybody?
I love it. And we've actually got a comment in our Facebook live chat here from Ronnie Walker, said that he trained at Lloyd's on Monday, and apparently those guys are training really hard, and he also said that he can't wait to see Jamil. He's very impressed by him. So a little bit of inside news from the TLI camp in Camp Springs, Maryland.
I like it. You know, and Jamil is such a technically minded guy. He loves to nerd out on techniques. I think he could pick up the heel hook game, leg lock game very quickly. I would not be shocked to see him do well at all. For me, my dream match also involves Nicky. I think he's just the guy, right? There's the hype behind him. He's so exciting to watch.
I just want
to.
I know that maybe it's a little unfair, but I want to see him tested by the best guys in the world, and I want to see him prove over and over, like, you know, he really is as good as the hype, right? I mean, we've seen him prove it, but I kind of like come on, let's keep it rolling, right?
That's why I want to see Nicky versus Paulo. I think that's an incredible match for Nicky to take on someone that's clearly a veteran, one of the best ever. And, you know, let's see if he can leg lock a meow. That's the game, right?
Another spicy match for me in that division has to be Mateus Gabriel versus Kennedy Maciel.
Okay.
Right? Because think about it.
Those guys
first round,
yeah, broke his
Nogi
arm.
Worlds. Well, let's rewind it a little bit. Because first round Nogi Worlds, Kennedy chokes out Mateus Gabriel cold. Mm. First round, rear naked choke, and then goes on to win Worlds. And then, Mike, tee it up. What happened to Pans?
At Pans, they were going back and forth in double guard pull, getting penalties, and Kennedy timed it right. They double pulled, and Kennedy threw up an arm lock off of it. Mateus threw up an arm lock, and, I mean, if you've seen the pictures or videos, broke
it's
Kennedy's
brutal.
Arm. Yeah.
That was, like, way past 180 degrees, like, full hyperextension. Apparently, there was no fracture. We spoke to Cabrinha a little bit after that. There was no fracture, and Kennedy actually returned to training very, very quickly.
Dislocated or like a
dislocation.
Sprain. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
No, not a sprain. Yeah. That was way, 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 way past the point of normal. So, yeah. Pretty gross clip if you haven't seen it.
About Paulo and Nicky, I remember they fought a couple years ago at some small thing, but I mean, Paulo beat him pretty handily there.
Oh,
but
I remember that, yeah.
But
yeah,
you
got
to
yeah.
think, Nicky, how old is he now?
He's 18, yeah.
He's 18, so what, he was like a sophomore in high school then or something. So how much has he matured? How much better is he now? That'd be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah. So, I've asked this question to a few people as well, but like, which do you think is the toughest group at ADCC this year?
I think 77 has got to be in the contention for that. 77 and over 99 are my picks.
I'm saying 77 too. It's my group of death. I'm coining it now. Group of death, 77 kilos.
That used to be 88. 88 was last year's group of death, I think we called it, coined it.
Yeah.
But a lot of those guys have jumped up to under 99. And, yeah, I think there's only, like, two or three returning athletes in 88.
Yeah, they're all at 99. Gordon Ryan's up there, Keenan Cornelius. I mean, you got Gaudio and Hulk in there at 99, too. That's going to be a tough. Vinny Magalhaes, that's a tough bracket at 99, too.
You know, we actually got some heat, and we'll jump into the rankings a little bit more later on, but we got some heat this morning because we dropped the Nogi rankings, and there were some comments as to why JT Torres was only number two in the 77-kilogram rankings. Well, the answer to that, of course, is that JT Torres has only had one no-gi match in the last 2 years. He only competed once no-gi since winning his ADCC gold medal in 2017 in Finland, and that was a recent Fight to Win Super Fight against Wagner Hocha, which I have to say he looked phenomenal in, right?
Yeah, and a lot of, yeah, like you pointed out, the rankings were for the last year, so if you haven't competed since last ADCC, you're not in there. But Hinato's been so active. But yeah, JT, I mean, he beat bronze medalist from the last ADCC, yep, Wagner Hocha, who's ranked third right behind him fairly easily at his last fight. So
yeah, I hate to say it, but it was a closeout, right? It absolutely shut him down, and not many people do that to Wagner, right?
I didn't predict that at all. You know, no. I was really curious to see, you know, Wagner is one of the most active athletes out there competing in every kind of format possible, but almost exclusively no-gi. And yeah, JT just went out there and beasted on him. So I think
you know what's quite telling for me actually is that Wagner had a super fight with Celso Vinicius at Kasai Super Series Orlando, July 4th, right? And that was a very typical Celso Wagner match: knocked down, drag out, just throwing each other around, nasty, nasty attacks, really gritty match, and it was very, very competitive. Now, the last time we saw JT versus Celso Vinicius was at ADCC 2017, and that match was super competitive. Mm. Like, Celso is a beast, right? He's so hard to score on. He's a rock. Yeah, he really is. Like, just a little torso with arms and legs.
Yeah.
But for that to be such a competitive match, and then for JT to come out of the wilderness, let's say, and just steamroll Wagner like that, it's like, oh my word, what has he been doing? Has he been up a mountain training under a waterfall or something? You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely.
I hope so. And also something we sort of skipped over with all the Nicky talk is another addition here, 77, Gary Tonin.
Total wild card.
Where does Gary Tonin slide in there?
Yeah, he's a wild card.
Makes it even tougher now, yeah, right? It's the group of death is even
tougher.
I'd
love to see see Wagner versus Gary. I think that's a fun match. I can't recall.
Roll that one back. Yeah. No, 2017.
Third place match.
What am I saying?
I don't remember how it went. Do you remember? Was it a close match?
Very scrappy.
There was this wild moment where Gary like basically is running around doing airplane arms, Gramby rolling out of Wagner's rear body lock.
That's right. Yeah.
yeah. A typical Gary Tonon antics, which is one of the reasons why I'm so excited to see him coming for ADCC this year. It's going to be fantastic.
You get some newcomers in there in that group of death too. Edwin Najmi, Lachlan.
I'm looking forward to Lachlan, man. He looked fantastic at that group event a couple weeks ago, submitting like five guys or something crazy in one day.
Submitted Manchikera in like 2 minutes in that round. That was crazy.
So I think he can make a big impact as a dark horse.
Edwin's got that darst to counter single legs he uses a lot. You got Dante Leon in there, who's made a big name for himself grappling no-gi this year. I mean, I got to say 77 is the toughest, in my opinion, just looking at this list.
Well, yep. I'm looking at the 16 guys. Of those 16 guys, obviously some of them are more active than others, but in our Flow Grappling No Gi rankings, if you take a look at 77 kilos, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in that top 19 ranking are all going to be in that bracket. So that's almost half of the ADCC 70 kilogram division are ranked right at the top of our division.
And that doesn't include Lucas Lepre, who is just not there because he's been inactive. So throwing those guys with Lucas Lepre, and it gets a little crazy.
Right. It gets really crazy. There are a bunch of other...
made the smart move to go down to 66, maybe.
Oh, for sure.
You were saying that was one of your dream matches, right?
Yeah, I would have loved to see. I mean, you were saying you want to see Nicky versus some of the best ever. Well, I think you can't do much better than Nicky versus JT or Nicky versus Lucas Lepre. Mm-hmm. But I think... man strength would be a factor in those matches. You know, those guys have just been at the top of the game for a better part of, 10 years or something, and Nicky's still coming into his own. I think it would be very difficult for him.
Yeah.
Not that I want to see him fail, not at all, but it would be a crazy test.
I know that this is sort of cliche to, like, pretend that the Danaher guys are all leg locks, because obviously they have a lot of other stuff, but, I mean, how hard is it going to be for him to get on the back of Lucas Lepre or something if they meet up? To win the positional battle there is going to be tough against a veteran with such a great base and such great fundamentals like Lucas.
I struggle to see anybody even getting in on a leg entry for somebody like Lucas. I just see him shutting it down. But ADCC, we could talk about that all day. But I want to talk about rankings, because We have totally revamped our ranking section. Michael, you're a big reason for that. You've been working really hard on producing the rankings. We've dropped updates to the no-gi rankings. There have been major changes at Pound for Pound and almost every division. We've dropped the adult male black belt gi rankings, the women's Pound for Pound rankings, masters 1, 2, and 3. So that's 30 to 45 years of age in total, three age divisions. And we're also dropping some colored belt rankings too, right?
Yeah, it's going to be that. I don't think anybody's ever ranked color belts by weight class. We're going to do top 10 at all the weights and pound for pound. Start off with purple and brown. Once, blue belt, we don't quite know. A lot of these guys were white belts last year. Once we see more of them, we'll get some blue belts going. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see the reaction. Don't inbox me, please. I know I'm going to get some stuff wrong.
So you're not that interested in a reaction,
I chose the wrong last name for you, I'm sorry, purple belts.
Yeah, that is a problem, right? It's always like you've got five names to choose from. But hey, if a team is wrong or something like that, let us know, right?
Yeah, for sure. And also, let us know if you get promoted. I've been spending all week stalking kids on Instagram trying to find out what belt you are currently, so...
Yeah, did he get promoted from blue to purple? What's going on? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the method behind the rankings? Like, how do we determine the rankings?
Well, it's a little bit easier at the black belt level, but for the color belts, first I got to find out who's at what belt. It takes an enormous amount of time. And then I just sort of compile a spreadsheet with all of the major tournaments last year. Like, say you rank them purple, all the major tournaments, blue and purple, right next to each other. And then all of the opens. The opens factor into it a lot less, use Grand Slam points a lot more, and just go off of that. And then it gets a little bit tough deciding, like, all right, who's higher, a blue belt world champion or a third place finisher at purple belt, that type of thing. So, it's a lot of just the eye test to who you think's better. But, yeah, I'm very interested to see how it's going to go.
It's a lot of work involved.
Oh, yeah, it's a ton of work. And I'm super glad that we've expanded the staff. We have Michael and, of course, another filmmaker on board, Ryan Smith, who's out there right now with the Tackets doing some filming. But
yeah, we should make a point of mentioning that William Tackett, who is number 10 on our 77 kilogram ranking, and is we've been told that he's potentially on the list for ADCC alternates as well. He was the third place finisher at the West Coast Trials and has had a couple of really nice matches recently. He won the Jits King event. We talked about that a little while ago. That was back in July. And most recently, we saw him against Nick Ronan on the Kasai Pro 6 as well in Atlantic City, right? You see that match?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tackett looked phenomenal. You know, Nick, I believe, is a black belt at this point, right, Nick Ronan? Or is he still brown belt?
No, I think he's purple, actually.
Nick Ronan's a purple belt.
Nah, I mean, some of these Danaher guys don't get promoted so fast.
It's hard to know. They're always in a rash guard, but I could have sworn
he's up there.
I know,
that's the thing.
I wrote the preview for that. I'm pretty sure he's a colored belt.
Okay, my bad. But either way, Tackett looked phenomenal.
He's beaten black belts, I believe. Like, so.
Oh, yeah. Probably a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tackett was on fire in that match. He was all over him. Didn't give him any chance to breathe or anything. Just constantly getting that side smash going, trying to roll under the back. Tackett looked really impressive in that match.
I want to see what those guys are doing in the gym. Really excited to see how those guys are training. Him, his brother Andrew, who's like 16, and Cody Steele as well. Something in the water up there. But going back to the rankings real quick, there were some major changes in the pound-for-pound Nogi ranking, because we expanded the ranking up to 16, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 unranked athletes came in on that pound for pound ranking. Of course, number one, numero uno, still being Gordon Ryan, and he made a point of just reminding everybody of that when they dropped this morning as well. He's like, doesn't matter who's in the rankings, I'm still number one. Yeah. Do you think that'll change after ADCC?
I mean, Buchecha, if Buchecha beats him in the open class, I mean, yeah, of course. It all
comes down to head-to-head matchups. Now, you got to win to be in the top of the rankings, and so far, only Felipe has managed to beat Gordon, and that was
a long time ago,
2 years ago. So
exactly, yeah.
That's why those rankings haven't changed, and that's why Felipe isn't on them. For those of you who are wondering, you know, last time he competed in Nogi, he lost by submission. So
exactly, Felipe has not been ranked in the pound for pound. Of course, he is ranked in the under 100 kilograms. He's ranked at number 9. Just one below Aaron Tex Johnson, who, of course, is the man who heel hooked him at Kasai Pro 6. So the problem, of course, is that Felipe is not going to have the opportunity to get onto those pound-for-pound rankings to climb, because he's only doing the super fight against Galvão.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting problem. Right? It just sort of came to me as we were talking right now. What do we do with the super fight winner?
How do you rank that super fight compared to winning a division?
Maybe you guys could leave some suggestions in the comments. That is an interesting problem. Actually, the super fight is kind of such a unique thing to ADCC, right? Because you have the defending absolute champion coming to take on the lineal super fight champion. Like, it's a little bit crazy. They're both current champions in their own way.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about the super fight a little later, because Reed's going to join us after the break. We'll get his feedback on that as well, because he's been hanging out with these guys a lot. I'm sure he's got some really good perspective on it.
Something interesting about the rankings I'm noticing is the number one guy at over 100 and at 99 are actually switching divisions for ADCC. Kainan's going up to over 100 and Gordon's going back down to 99.
So. Well, Kainan's been flip-flopping weight divisions quite a lot recently, right? Because we put him here at under 99. Because we've kind of gone with ADCC weight categories for the rankings, right? 66, 77, 88, 99, over 99. But the tournament that he did, Kasai Pro 5, earlier this year, which he won, beating Tex, you know, beating Craig Jones, beating all those guys, I was at 205 pounds, which is right around 94 kilos. It was actually a little bit below the 99, right? 99 is about 218, I think, right?
Right.
And, he's going to be fighting over 99 at ADCC, although... When he weighed in for his super fight recently against Patrick Ogio for Kasai Pro 6, and he weighed in, he was like walking around like 213 or something like that.
Yeah, well, I feel like 99 is his weight class, right? But I mean, team issues. Yeah, Hulk's in there, so I'm sure Galvão was telling these guys, hey, you know, why am I going to have two of my studs fight second round?
Right.
Kainan, go up there and good luck trying to beat Buchecha. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are doing that. You see Ali bumped up to over 90. I think a lot of people have figured out, you know, I'm not going to go in the same bracket as my teammate, fight him second round.
100%. Yeah. It's actually interesting that Spriggs won the trials at over 99. Under 99. But yeah, it would have been tough with Ali in there as well, right? So, but interesting to see what happens there with those divisions, because Gordon currently ranked at over 100 kilos, so over 99, but he's going to be doing ADCC at under 99, and his teammate Nick Rodriguez is going to be doing over 99. So, like you say, like, could completely change the landscape of those rankings pretty soon. So, moving on. We got a couple of really interesting events on the horizon with more implications for ADCC. What's on the cards, Chase?
Well, to kick it off, this Friday at Fight to Win 123, we've got Dante Leon versus Gabriel Arges in the main event there. That's really interesting, actually, because they're in different ADCC categories. Dante is in 77, as we mentioned, and Gabriel's in at 88. So a little bit of an interesting scenario there, because you have to think Gabriel will be a little bit bigger, but I imagine Dante won't be weaker. That dude is extremely strong and always pushing the pace there with the weight. So I'm really excited.
I don't think that Gabriel's scraping that 88 kilogram weight limit either. He's I don't think he's quite that big.
Maybe. I mean, I've seen him do 77 before at UAE events. So I mean, I'd imagine if Edwin wasn't in there, we probably would have seen Gabriel go down to 77 for this tournament.
And actually, Servio Tullio is Servio, at 77 as well.
They would just be a whole quarterfinal. You put those guys in there.
Yeah. So unfortunately, Servio won the Brazilian trials at 77. And he's a Gracie Barra guy from Belo Horizonte, same place as Felipe Penner and Gabriel Arges and Romulo Bahal, all those guys from there. And then Edwin got invited as well. So unfortunately, they're going to have to meet second round at the latest. So
that's tough.
That's ADCC.
That's the way it goes. But I can't wait to see this match. Michael and I were actually talking about it the other day, and it's going to be very different if they want to play the Fight to Win game, because it rewards basically only submissions. And if you don't
do what you want,
if you don't attack, you're very likely to lose to someone who might just have like a shitty footlock attempt on you. You really have to sort of go after the sub. So it's very different than ADCC.
I think Fight to Win rules might favor Dante a little bit, because Gabriel's 50. I mean, I don't know how Gabriel's heel hooks are, but Gabriel likes 50-50. So it's a whole different game with heel hooks involved. So, and then also, I mean, he's a scrappy guy. He's so good at the scrambles, going after submissions. When they're scoring for submission attempts, win it. I think these rule set really helps Dante compared to fighting Gabriel and IBJJF.
You know, I'm calling it now. I am absolutely convinced that Dante's going to do some damage at 77. I think he's got the perfect game for ADCC.
So,
Fight to Win rules, it's a really, just total toss-up what to expect at that match, right? Like you said. It's a submission-only event. You know, we could see wrestling. We could see just an immediate guard pull. Who knows, right? There's absolutely no way of knowing. I would expect to see guys kind of, roll out elements of their game plan for ADCC, as a way of preparing and stuff. But Dante's game, I feel, he has the potential to perform well in ADCC. He's actually, as you said, he's a physical beast. He's super strong, lifts like a million pounds. You know, he's actually very, very good off his back. He's got a great kind of bottom game. He inverts really, really well. He's great at getting in underneath his opponent's legs. He wrestles up. He wrestles people back down, So I think you put all those elements together and it's like, that's kind of what you're looking for in the sort of perfect ADCC competitor, right? Somebody who can do it all.
Absolutely. Dante's a guy that sort of lives off the scrambles, which can hurt you at the IBJJF black belt level where guys are tying you up. But, I mean, ADCC where you're wrestling, sprawling, he can try and spin around and get the back, get on a guillotine. Yeah, I think that Dante's a dark horse for 77 for sure.
I'm just glad to see a healthy Gabriel Arges. So the last time we saw him in Nogi, he was a little bit injured against Craig Jones, and that match definitely did not go his way. Craig looked great, but something looked a little bit off with Gabriel. He, of course, went on to win the World Championships in the Gi, so you got to think he's coming in a great shape, and I'm looking forward to seeing him kind of get one back. You know what I mean? Like even if he doesn't win his matches, I'm sure he'll be doing great out there, and I'm looking forward to him just performing at a high level like he know he can, so that's going
to
be great.
It's interesting how many guys are taking super fights right before ADC. It seems to be the move, right? Everybody's taking a super fight 4 to 6 weeks out, maybe 3 weeks with some of these guys.
This is not the only one, actually. Fight to Win 123 is coming up. It's this weekend, August 30th, Friday night in Sacramento. Dante Leon versus Gabriel Arges. However, Fight to Win 124, the following weekend, September 7th, you've got Edwin Najmi versus Marcelo Mafra, better known as La Pella. And you got Josh Hinger versus Arnaldo Maidana. So Edwin, doing much like Gabriel, taking a tune-up match against an ADCC veteran in La Pella. And Josh Hinger, who has been really, really active the last couple of weeks, taking on a pretty tough challenge in Arnaldo Maidana from Checkmate, right?
Yeah, it's only 3 weeks out right there. Tough matchups. I mean, Edwin's fighting La Pella, multiple-time Nogi world champion, who's beat some guys, beat Taza at the last ADCC, and Hinger's fighting Maidana, who's no easy fight. I mean, they're 1-1 against each other. So 3 weeks out, that's some tough tune-up matches they got going on.
I was thinking about this.
These are not easy.
I was thinking about like the frequency of these high level competitors doing their thing. But you take any other sport, and they have to go through the playoffs. These guys don't do the World Series after 3 months off in a training camp. You know, they are competing all the way up.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we are moving towards a more professional sport where things are more like a league. You know, I don't know. It's weird because they're different organizations, but that's sort of how maybe the mentality behind it.
I hear you, because some of these guys won trials a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, or some of these guys, as we've mentioned, haven't competed barely any, if not any, like no-gi since 2017. So you'd think that actually it would make sense to get a, you know, get some reps in, right, before the big day comes around. And that's not that far away. But it kind of seems like really right on top of it, right?
That's a little risky, for sure.
Yeah, you know, the possibility of getting hurt and so on is,
I guess the World Series is not trying to rip your legs off.
Yeah, a little scarier when they're trying to break your bones and stuff. Yeah, for sure.
We've got a bear in the comments here actually saying that bear from Show Your Roll.
What's up, bear?
Saying that wrestling and leg locks seem to be the move, and it's hard to argue with that.
I mean, he's not the only person to say it. One of the greatest minds in jiu-jitsu currently, Mr. Keenan Cornelius himself. A beautiful mind, indeed. he said it himself, right? The wrestling is kind of, he feels the no-gi meta game is imploding, in his words, and he feels it's just about wrestling and leg locks nowadays. So I'm not sure I completely agree with that still. I think there are some great guys out there who are showing that it's more about just that. But it's definitely one opinion.
Yeah,
but,
and then guillotines and RNCs, basically, and that's the game, basically.
I think rear naked choke is still by far, in a way, the most common submission.
That's
right?
The most common submission, with heel hooks being, I think, second on that list. But ooh, you look at someone who doesn't play that, and I'm not shocked that it's at the lighter weight class, but I did a study on Cabrini's last championship run. He pulled guard every match except the final and swept the top. So he didn't wrestle. He didn't waste any energy wrestling. But once he got on top, he stayed there. I was blown away by his economy of efforts. Like, once he swept, he entered a passing sequence. He wasn't in a scramble. He just kind of weighed on the guy, eventually got his pass. Also didn't fight for side control, but rather just went straight to the back. So
economy of effort, right?
Yes.
Wow, that's incredible.
So I recommend you guys go back. I've been putting out studies almost every week for each of the last year's champions from ADCC.
You did a good one yesterday with Gordon.
Yeah, that one popped off. You guys had a lot to say about that. And it's a great way to see the different strategies being implemented successfully, because there are a lot of people trying the same game, but they can't always get the wins. But when we look at these championships, or champions, I should say, there's a lot to learn there.
It's interesting how you see the game plan change up. Like, a lot of these guys basically join a wrestling team for the last month. You see these guys, they're in wrestling rooms. Some of these guys are in a room with shoes and headgear on wrestling. So it's completely different game plan than what they're used to.
It does speak to the importance of wrestling at ADCC, right? Well, I think Josh Hinger said recently as well that ADCC is basically a wrestling competition with submissions. Oh, yeah.
Which is why I like it for him, because it opens up his guillotine, his chin strap that he loves too. I think Hinger could do some damage here.
Josh Hinger versus Arnaldo Maidana. That's a very interesting one. They fought before, right? Gi and no gi. And last time they fought no gi, the only time they fought no gi was when Josh ran through the opposition at that ACB tournament where he won the belt.
Gogo Plata.
Hit him with the Gogo Plata. After the whole Hingatine sequence. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think no wrestling in this one. Arnaldo's going to sit in that for the fight to win. I don't think.
Well, that's right, because of that other league, you had to, there's no take, or there's, you can't pull guard. There's a penalty,
for the first
right?
minute. You can pull minute? Guard for the first minute.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Interesting. But some great super fights on that one. Fight to Win 124, that is Seattle, and that is September 7th. Edwin Najmi versus LaPella, Josh Hinger versus Arnaldo Maidana, and great women's match, Karen Antunes versus Maisa Bastos.
That's a crazy match as well. Big size difference there.
Yeah, big.
Yeah, well, not that much. Roosterweight versus Light Featherweight.
But Maisa.
Karen's jacked, and he's way bigger than Maisa.
Maisa's got to be the smallest black belt on earth. She's so small. She's great. Great jiu-jitsu, but I think
she's Karen, a tiny human being.
Yeah, but I might pick Maisa. She's had some success.
Really? I got to say, though, Karen has looked great lately.
Is it a gi match or no gi?
I believe it's gi. But, I mean, she's so good, Karen. It's like she's a great competitor, and you know, she did...
She won
Worlds 2 years ago. She was at Masters Worlds very recently. She also won the Fight to Win belt this year, if I remember correctly. So, you know, she's been super active. I like it. Just double checking, and it is a gi match. So that's one to watch.
Gotta watch the Barambolas from Maisa.
Yeah, right. No surprise there. September 7th, Grapple Fest 6 is coming back, and you're going to watch it live on Flow Grappling. Got a couple of very interesting main event matches. Both the Miao brothers will be in action. João Miao and Paulo, his brother, his twin brother, they're going to be taking on, João's going to be taking on Frank Rosenthal, and Paulo's going to be taking on the Polish black belt, Kamil Wilk. So Kamil's actually a, he's ADCC veteran, 2017, two-time trials winner, I believe, but not at ADCC this year. But again, that's it, as we were talking about ADCC tune-up matches. Paulo's in, João or Frank aren't, of course, but Paulo is in, so it's a good tune-up match, and literally 2 weeks out as well, right?
Yeah, and also overseas travel for those guys. So yeah, definitely aggressive move for Paulo, but it seems to be the trend this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. These guys don't care. Joel's on a super fight every weekend, it seems like.
I mean, he's been really busy lately. Yeah. And most recently we saw him at the Kasai Pro 6, where he won the bantamweight tournament, the 135 pound tournament, and looked great. Hit submission win over Richard Alarcon, who, as we saw, is qualified for ADCC. He beat a number of really good names. He beat Ashley Williams. He beat who else was in his division, in his bracket? Rafael Freitas.
Yes, yeah, with that nasty heel hook.
Nasty, yeah.
I hope Freitas is doing okay. That did not look great.
So we actually we spoke to his opponent, Frank Rosenthal, backstage just after João won Kasai Pro 6, and we actually have an interview clip. So Frank is going to give us some thoughts about what he kind of like gleaned from watching João in action at Kasai Pro 6. Let's roll the tape and take a look.
You know, it's fine. I've been watching João and Paulo, you know, both of them for a very long time, probably since I was a blue belt. And yeah, you know, tonight was very interesting because they, João competed against a lot of guys that I've competed against. So it was kind of a good measuring tool, and it was interesting to see how his game's evolved. He's definitely evolved within the last, you know, couple years, especially like breaking into the sub-only scene. So it was very interesting to see him in this format, and, you know, his game looks, you know, impressive as always. So it should be a good scrap in a few weeks.
Biggest takeaways, technically, you said that he's developing, he's adding things to his game. Anything you noticed?
Yeah, he's definitely more heavy into the leg entanglements and using them to go into submission holds. He's always been very talented at using them to score and to get to the back, but I think now what you're seeing is a hybrid of both scoring methods, but also, you know, getting into good ashigaramis and attacking the legs. So I think that'll make for a fun exchange, especially, you know, being that it's a sub-only match, kind of let us go at each other.
So, interesting words from Frank there, basically saying about how João has added leg lock elements to his game. So, he's always been known for the leg fighting, the inversions, but now he's using that game, which he's so good at, and he's adding in the threat of leg attacks, heel hooks, you know, mostly, of course. What do you guys think about that? It's pretty intriguing, right?
Well, you got Eddie over there now, Eddie Cummings in Unity. You know, that's got to bring something. I mean, they always had good leg locks. I mean, Junie's always had mixed them in, but, I mean, Eddie's one of the leg lock wizards out there, right? So him coming in. When I was there in October, actually, I mean, I saw one. I think it was João and Eddie were sitting there, you know, trading stuff back and forth, the techniques after class. So, I mean, I'm sure they're working a lot with that guy. And, yeah, got to be improving their leg lock game.
What an incubation tank, a thought tank there for technique, right? Everyone thinks of Danaher's, but now we have those guys in the mix together, plus Murillo, it's like, oh my God, there's some monsters being bred.
Yeah, that is pretty scary. I think we've mentioned this before about how Murillo, so he told me that, you know, when it comes to the when it comes to his guys, they're mostly lightweight guys, right? They're usually lightweight and below. There's a few guys who are slightly bigger, but they all Baron Bolo from bottom, and they pressure pass from top.
It's such an interesting mix. Forcing half guard and smashing, dude. Yeah, their passing is some of the most underrated injuries.
It is underrated,
because you see online people say, "Oh, Miao brothers, Baron Bolo." You watch them the last couple of years; they're, you know, forcing half guard and just
they've been playing
smashing,
a lot of top
dude.
Game.
Smashing guys. How about João, though, competing left and right? I mean, I think he's doing super fights in gyms and stuff. He's getting that money. Just so could do a super fight in a parking lot if you got a few grand to throw him.
Man, I'm excited to see the match with Frank Rosenthal. Frank's he's a Danaher Death Squad team member, of course. Got a great leg lock game. So I think it's going to be interesting, especially in the submission-only rule set, of course. You know, so it'll really allow them to explore those positions.
I think they're 15-minute matches as well.
Yeah.
I do believe they're
20, actually, maybe.
Are they 20?
Yeah, maybe 20, yeah.
So that's, you know, I think that's the format you got to go with for submission-only. Fight to Win has like 40 fights a night, so they couldn't do that long of a show.
No.
But for something like Grapple Fest, I think it makes sense to have a little bit more drawn out, longer time periods.
Yeah. Also going to see the return of Masakazu Imanari. the famous Imanari role creator. And he's got a match on the same event up against Ben Eddy of 10th Planet. Ben Eddy, I don't know if you guys seen, but he's the guy who, the creator of the Hindu teen.
I've seen some clips. Those are pretty wild. I
don't even know what that move is.
Okay, we're going to drop that one into the comments in the social media so people can see it, Chase. Because the Hindu teen, I'm going to show it to you real quick here, Michael, so you can see. And then drop it in the live stream comments so that people can see it themselves. But check this out. It's basically a guillotine, like high elbow guillotine with rubber guard at the same time. It's like it doesn't really make sense. You got to be super flexible to get it.
Is he going to lock up the guillotine over the foot like this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like he's got the rubber guard clamping down on the back of the guy's neck and he kind of reaches over the top of it and he gets that guillotine and crazy, right?
Him and Imanari should be a fun one.
Yeah, they're going to get into some interesting positions.
Unorthodox attacks right there, yeah.
What do you know about this Wilk guy? Do you think he's got anything for Paulo? I know you said he's a couple time ADCC veteran. What kind of style is this guy?
He's Does he have anything for Paulo? Yeah. That is a tough question. I'm going to have to be brutally honest. I don't think so. I think Paulo's going to crush him. And, you know, no disrespect, Camille, but come on. I mean, just look at it. Paulo is an absolute freaking beast, and he has just been picking up momentum the last couple of years. And I got to say, I think this match totally favors Paulo.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many people at under 66 that Paulo's not going to crush. I mean, be a big win for this guy. Be a career maker if he gets it. But, yeah, it'd be, I think, a huge upset if he pulls that off.
Yeah. So, Grapplefest 6 coming up on September 7th. As we mentioned, João Miau versus Frank Rosenthal, Paulo Miau versus Camille Wilk, and Imanari versus Ben Eddy, and along with a ton of other big super fights. I look forward to that live on Flow Grappling soon. So we're going to play the vlog trailer now so that you guys can see a little bit of what Reed was up to down in Brazil. Mike, you're going to jump out and you're going to go grab Reed while this is playing. And then we're going to switch up and we're going to talk about some of the cool stuff that's been happening all across the world. All right, guys, let's roll this vlog trailer and take a look. Ooh, goosebumps.
Reed has lost some weight on his trip there to Brazil. Took a little food poisoning.
He's actually delayed in customs. He's coming here right now. Here he comes.
Making his...
Straight off the plane from Brazil.
From Brazil, oh my God.
Dude, I can't believe you ran that far.
It just flew in, and boy, his arms are tired.
Got the ADCC.
My arms aren't tired. Everything else is tired.
Dude, you got some acai down there or what? Look at these arms.
Plenty of acai.
Well, man, I got to say, that vlog teaser gave us a little taste of what you're up to down in Brazil, and it looked phenomenal. What was the trip like?
A little cinematic teaser there, out there. Man, Brazil's a wild place. You guys both know. You guys have been there a couple times.
Been there once or twice.
Never been to Belo Horizonte.
It was cool. Like? Belo Horizonte, right? Belo Horizonte, this is a place in Brazil, a city in Brazil that is, you know, has a long history of jiu-jitsu at this place, you know? So it was really, really cool to go there. You know, of course, guys like Homolo came from there, and Felipe is doing a great thing down there. There's a big Gracie Baja contingent.
Huge, right?
Contingent down there. Caverinha, I believe, is also from... I don't know.
Caverinha, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I believe he's from Belo Horizonte.
Huh, okay. Well, that's interesting.
Man, it was so cool. You know, I was just like in Brazil.
And, yep. Yeah, you were.
It's such a cool place to be for jiu-jitsu, obviously, right? I was like trying to... I'm super good at saying... No fala português. Now
got some reps
really
in on that.
Good. Like the bomb, Reed. Like the bomb.
Really good at saying that. But no, anyway, we went out to this one restaurant, you know, and I'm trying to communicate, trying to find some people that speak English because it can be tough. And finally sparked a conversation with this one guy sitting next to me who's kind of like helping us. It was like, oh, you guys are Americans. He was like, what are you here for? And I was like, here for jiu-jitsu. And he was like, oh, I'm a black belt under Caverina. I've been training for 15 years. Oh. You know, it was just like this random meeting in this random restaurant. And he knew Cesar Casamaggio.
That's right, the guy in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Who's a black belt under Caverina.
Gotcha. Wow.
So yeah, I mean, no man, it was a lot of fun. It was a great trip. You know, I've got to go down there, see how Felipe was training, got to see both sides a little bit of, you know, this really big super fight we got coming up in just a little bit.
Belo Horizonte is people think of Rio and they think of people think of Brazil, they think of Rio, they think of Sao Paulo, they think of the Amazon jungle, and that's about it, right? Yeah. But there's a lot of other stuff. So you went to Belo Horizonte, which is a city kind of like right in the middle of Brazil, and it's a huge city, right? I think we saw the footage of you
just
flying in.
Just a little bit of that drone footage, that's like a quarter of the city, you know? It felt like a sprawling metropolis.
But what was the vibe down there like? What did you pick up from your travel?
Man, you know, we were only down there a couple of days. We spent a lot of time in the gym with Felipe, you know, but Felipe's got a real, you know, laxed attitude, and he's a laxed kind of chill guy, goes with the flow, you know, so it was just kind of what his schedule was, you know. We did some training, did some wrestling. I got to jump in there and train a couple times.
Nice.
You know, Felipe has this amazing, gorgeous little bat cave of a gym, you know,
cave. I love that.
Out there.
That's the basement.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard, but it does not look like a basement.
Yeah,
I've been in basements before.
Yeah, it's like a house, kind of like built into a hillside, so like it looks really, really cool. But yeah, and you can see kind of some of the foliage and just you know, greenery that is Belo Horizonte. But it's a beautiful spot, absolutely beautiful spot. A lot of tough guys that training there. You know, he's got some really tough brown belts, these big guys down there training. I saw him train some wrestling as well, so he's working his wrestling.
Actually, you know what? While we're talking about this, we should play a clip. We have like a clip of Felipe training, just some montage, some stuff from your vlog. Actually, we can post the link to the vlog in the comments. You guys can find it. But let's just roll it kind of as we're talking, because I want to know, like, what is Felipe training? What is Felipe's training look like right now? You know, he's only a month away from the super fight, right?
Yeah. I think he's really focusing on the grind. You know, that seemed to be something that he was really focusing on, and something that I've picked up, you know, over these last couple months or whatever, is like, man, that's something they really love about ADCC, is just that the grind of it. You know, just
all the athletes,
all of them. I feel like that's like one of the most alluring parts about ADCC is that it may not be the most technical competition. It may not be, you know, there's you know, some more intricate rule sets or things like that, you know, but like what gets you the win at ADCC is just like being tougher and just being there at minute 40. And I think a lot of those guys know this. And so maybe, you know, Felipe doesn't have the most structured, but for sure, man, he's down there working hard for an hour and a half, just rolling with these guys. He's got a good little crew.
So it's hard to tell, but the colored rash guards, those are the belt ranks, right?
Yeah.
So
I got myself a purple one.
Nice. So there's a mix of guys in that room then? He's training with a bit of everybody?
Yeah, he's got a lot of purple and brown belts, for sure. Got a lot of purple and brown belts, which I think is probably perfect for what he's doing. You know, some guys who are very technical, some big guys who are very good.
That's a bit different than Andre, though, right? Like, Andre's rolling with other black belts going to ADCC. Is that a bit of a mentality
Hulk,
shift?
Kynan, Hinger, those guys.
Man, I think it was cool watching the heavyweight Grand Prix and watching Hulk out there, because it was very clear, right, that like, man, those guys at Atos are wrestling. Like, you know, his cardio didn't hold up, and he lost the match to Cyborg, which is another amazing story. But from watching some of his matches, it was like, man, those guys are wrestling hard out there at Atos. And I think, man, Atos has got to be a pretty unique spot. It's hard to find as high level training like that.
Well, you were there also, anywhere, right? Let's not forget that you were in San Diego just a couple of weeks ago before you went down to Brazil. So you've seen both sides of the coin over the last couple of weeks, right?
I got all the inside information, man. All that
spill it.
This is all the guy. That inside scoop, right? No, yeah. I got to go out to San Diego. You know, it's no secret, man. Both these guys are working hard. You know, I definitely think this is the biggest super fight in ADCC history. You know, you got two champions, you know, just the story that's being told. You know, they have a bit of a history. They have this rivalry. They've fought each other four times and, you know, are 2-2. So it's kind of for all the marbles type of thing. There's a lot of money, a lot on the line. It's Andre's, I believe it's his 37th birthday on that day.
That's crazy.
And he's trying to retire. Felipe obviously trying to play spoiler, trying to write his legacy. There's so many implications. I'm really, really looking forward to that matchup and going to the both of their camps and seeing how serious they're both taking it. You know, like that's it. This is no joke to both of them. So
that's an interesting point you made there. It's like about how with Andre making no secret about the fact that he's winding down his career, Felipe, of course, just picking up momentum as he's been going over the last couple of years, getting better and better. That this super fight with Andre, this is actually a huge opportunity for Felipe to really, you know, start what could be a golden phase of his career, right?
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Who's better than Felipe Penna?
I was gonna ask you guys. I mean, it's tough when you look at Andre's legacy with all those super fight championship wins. But would Felipe, if he wins, which is definitely not a guarantee by any means, become the best no-gi athlete ever? He's got two wins over Gordon. If he beats Galvão in the super fight, I don't know. I think he's got a pretty strong claim.
I think that's what's at stake here. You know,
I think Galvão solidifies that title as well if he beats Felipe.
I don't think we could say it yet, because if you look at Galvão, he won double gold that year in 2011, right? He won his weight division and the absolute, and that put him into the super fight the following year. And, you know, of course, you know, defending it since then, holding the record for super fight defenses. Felipe only ever took one gold medal at ADCC. Two-time silver medalist, but only took gold in the absolute division. Didn't manage to do it in either of the weight classes that he entered in 2015 or 17. So there's one less medal on the mantelpiece, shall we say.
True. You know, he did lose to Rodolfo Vieira in 2015. Very, very close match, his first ADCC. And then, like you said, he lost to Yuri. A very close match at his weight class there. But I don't know. The, you know, glory or what are they? What's the saying? That rewards the bold or whatever, you know?
Fortune features the bold.
Fortune
favors the bold. Now you got me tripped out.
My bad.
Got there in the end.
You know, and Felipe went out there and he won the absolute division, man. And you can't take that away from him. He choked Buchecha and beat Gordon Ryan.
And this is after a 40-minute match with Yuri Simões, by the way.
Yeah,
right?
After that final, you know, I think. If there was any doubt at how good Felipe is, I think it was all squashed away during that absolute run, because that was nothing short of amazing, and that's why it makes this match with Galvão kind of so great.
There's such a multitude of potential storylines after the super fight as well that are just, you know, infinite, basically. Like, depending on who wins, you know, if Andre wins, does he just write off, and what happens to the lineal super fight championship then?
I think that's kind of what he said. Like, I think he's saying that, you know, if he does defend the super fight and he does beat Felipe, he's not planning to come back 2 years from now.
Right, and then where do we go from there?
I think if Andre has his way, and I don't think this is a secret either, if Andre has his way, Kynan or Lucas win the absolute division, and he passes, you know, the torch.
In a perfect storybook world for Atos.
To either Lucas or Kynan.
He wouldn't be the first person to vacate that either, because, you know, there have been other absolute winners in the past that didn't return.
I think Myers Sperry might be one of those.
Roger Gracie. You know, Gracie won the absolute division, I think it's 2005, and he didn't bother coming back to have a crack at that super fight, even though he was eligible. Roger Gracie, I'm good to double golds and my million other gold medals. Yeah,
finished all eight people, I'm fine.
Yeah, right. I gotta say, I am really, really intrigued to know more about what's going on at San Diego as well, because you mentioned a little bit there about, you know, the fact that Andre is training with all these guys. But you have to wonder, like, how the hell can you hang day in, day out hardcore training with those young, hungry guys when you are 37, 38 years of age. That must be no easy task, right?
It's a room full of sharks out there in Atos, for sure. It's a tough room. But whatever it is, man, Andre makes it look easy, you know? You know, like he's out there, you know, still doing it. And we've been around him these last couple of years, and he knows how to put together a training camp, and he knows how to win specifically this ADCC Superfight too. So, you know, whether it's just a repetition thing that he's going back to, he's done this camp, you know, many times before. You know, I think he'll be prepared. And then Felipe the same. You know, this is a little bit different Felipe. You know, he's just preparing for one match, for one guy. I think both of them are a little relieved at that. But
it is crazy that they're literally killing themselves for one guy,
for
one match.
One guy, one match.
Weeks, for months.
Yep.
Singular focus, just that one match. And they've known about it for 2 years. It's been wild. Brewing in the back of their mind, the 2 years. This is what I'm going to have to do.
What a relief that must be to finally be getting there.
I guess, actually, yeah. It's got a heavyweight to carry around, but I don't know. What do we think we can expect from this match? Because we've seen a very different Galvão, I think, in all of the super fights that he's had the last couple of years. His last one against Carlos Sanz was really intriguing. He looked untouchable in that one. Felipe, though, is a totally different animal. Like, does Galvão change his game up? Does he come in with some new strategy, some
Absolutely
new tricks?
Not. I don't think so at all.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Why not? I think the format matters, right? So penalties start immediately at ADCC finals. So in the opening rounds, you can pull guard in the first 5 minutes. However, in a 20-minute final, you cannot pull guard without being penalized. And I think Felipe's best shot is by getting the match to the ground as quickly as possible, whether either accepting those penalty points or pulling off a takedown. But I think Andre's great at wrestling offensively and counter-wrestling, and I don't know if Felipe wants to take the risk of getting a penalty point. So I think Andre will keep it on the feet for as long as possible and do well at it.
I think you're underestimating Felipe's wrestling, though. Mm. Like, Felipe has...
Is that so?
Good, good wrestling. Yeah. I'm not saying that you call him bad or the inferior wrestler, but, you know, with youth, with the physical exuberance that comes with youth, and the fact that we've seen him go head-to-head for 40 minutes with guys like Yuri Simões, with Rodolfo Vieira, some of the best no-gi grapplers in the world, who also happen to have very, very strong wrestling games. I kind of feel that, like, if anybody can go head-to-head with Galvão in a stand-up match, it's got to be Felipe, right?
Well, they definitely they have two very different body types, too. You know, Felipe's much longer, a little slimmer, and, you know, Galvão is just, you know, he's
short. Muscle.
Yeah, he's short. He's just built like a house, you know. So they have very different body types. But, you know, I think you have to admit that, like, the people would say the way to beat Felipe is to keep it on the feet. That's where he had a 40-minute wrestling match with Rodolfo. He had a 40-minute wrestling match with Yuri, and he did those are the two matches, the two blemishes, basically. You know, when he gets it onto the mat versus Buchecha, when he gets it onto the mat versus Gordon, you know, he wins.
Deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He takes people's back. That's what Felipe does. And I mean, that's kind of what Andre does too.
I mean, Gordon took Felipe down in that match. And that was the beginning of the end, actually. So, you know,
I do agree. I think, you know, with youth on his side as well, you know, I think, like, getting it to the mat as early as possible could be a key for Felipe to win this one. But a lot could happen, man. It's going to be an interesting match. You know, it's going to be a...
You know, I have one question for you guys. I'd really like both of your opinions on this one. Genuinely so, because I have no idea myself. Do you think that we could see a submission in this match? Tough question, I know.
I'll have to be honest. But, I mean, I think just two guys who are at the absolute highest level of the game, it's obviously rare to see a submission in that type of match. Historically, I would say it doesn't usually happen. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be an exciting match, though. Mm-hmm. You know, especially the storyline of a long match like that, you know, presents a lot of interesting things. And I don't think they're going to let this one go to the judges or anything like that.
Right.
These guys don't get it twisted. These guys want to beat each other.
It's a very long non-answer you just gave there, Reed.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, no, my answer was no. My answer was I don't think it'll end in a submission.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. I'm just kind of racking my brain trying to think, and I think Andre beat Braulio in 2013 by
choke.
Submission, and mm-hmm. that was his first super fight. That was mm-hmm. when he actually challenged the reigning champion, who was Braulio, beat him with a rear naked choke. But the subsequent super fights against Cyborg in 2015 and Calla Sands in 2017, he won by points, definitively by points, like takedown and advancing position,
it was
right?
Digit, right? I think it's 8 points, maybe 10 points.
No, I believe. Or what were we talking?
Calla Sands.
Yeah. I think it was 14.
14 points.
I think
there,
I think because
it was
got the
back and stuff, right?
Because and then he kept taking the hooks out and putting them back in, which is kind of an ADCC
right. You get 3 points.
Centric
right.
Rio.
Yeah.
Isn't that such a weird rule about how you can have the body triangle close on one side mm-hmm. in ACC? You open it and you close it on the other side, and you get another 3 points.
That's 6 points right there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's some peak. This is the thing I think that may catch a few guys out. I mean, certainly not Felipe or Galvao, because those guys are very experienced and they're drilled in on ADCC. But you have to think that some guys are going to get caught out because of the peculiarities of the ADCC rule set, right?
You got to do your homework. I mean, just between when you can actually score points, when you can't, what the penalties actually start, the fact that you can roll and continue submission attacks and takedowns, sometimes out of bounds. There's not like a clear definitive line there. Basically, I think what Reed was saying about the grind and going hard as hell kind of being a theme, that's how you should approach this event. Like, if you can attack, if you can keep it going, if you can keep moving, do that, because that will be rewarded, I want to say.
That is actually how I am approaching this event as well. I plan to be
you're in good shape,
crawling to the plane, limping onto the plane Monday morning. This is ADCC, guys. This is
leave it all out there.
Exactly. So I am fully prepared to leave it 100% out there, content wise.
Are we talking about the after party?
We're definitely talking about the after party.
I'm crawling home from that as well.
Let's go. This is we're weeks away now. It's a reality. This is the biggest competition of the year. I'm so excited for it. Cannot wait for it.
You've had the energy as well, though, right? You felt it firsthand.
I mean,
been in the gyms.
I've been lucky to go around to go all of these gyms and see everybody preparing and just see the vibe. There's obviously everybody trains hard year round, but there's a renewed focus. There's a there's something in the air when it comes to ADCC. I think everybody knows it. Everybody knows like how big of a deal it is to win ADCC, and especially a lot of those divisions. 66 is wide open.
Yeah.
88 is kind of wide open. A lot of these divisions, we could see some of these dark horses really make a name for themselves and blow up.
So. Let me ask, because you've been to so many gyms the last couple of weeks. You've been to, correct me if I'm wrong, Atos, 10th Planet. You've been to Henzo's. You've been to Marcelo's. You've been to Felipe's. Hurricane permitting, you've got to hopefully go to Miami next week. Which is the gym that has there been any electricity in the air at any of these gyms? Like, what's the energy like, and which one has jumped out at you?
It was interesting going to Henzo's, because I went to Henzo's specifically kind of around this time before ADCC the last time. So it was just been very interesting to come full circle mm-hmm. and see how they were preparing in 2017 and seeing in John, the way John thinks sets things up, and then coming back 2 years later. What are these guys, same group of guys, these same thinkers of jiu-jitsu, what are they working on now, 2 years later? What's the focus now? What do they change? What are the little things that they realized that maybe they shouldn't focus on? Or that was one of the most interesting things, I think, was just kind of, like I said, going back there 2 years after and seeing the changes and just seeing what these thinkers are thinking about.
Interesting. I'm intrigued. I gotta say,
Marcelo is also great there, being there as well, because there's just so much energy, and I think that a lot of those guys at Marcelo's, they really, really want to build on the legacy that Marcelo Garcia has built. I think that's an important thing to a lot of those guys, especially a guy like Mateus Deniz, who comes from the same town as Marcelo Garcia. I think Johnny said the same thing to me.
Kind of a responsibility to rep the team, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the greatest ADCC champion, depending on who you talk to, but certainly one of the most accomplished champions in the history of ADCC, and he's there every single day giving these guys the tools, the advice, the things that they need to to win. And I think that they feel a lot of that pressure to, or not pressure, but they feel a lot of the
responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. There you go. Responsibility to carry that torch and build on his legacy.
Marcelo's got three guys, three different weight divisions, right? 66, 77. Oh no, he's got four. Sorry, that's right. He's got Gianni and Ruan Alvarenga in at 66. He's got John Stava at 77, and he's got Mateus at 88. Right. So.
Yeah.
God, man, I can't think. Obviously there are a lot of ADCC champions out there, but there's only one five-time ADCC champion, and to train with that guy day in day out for an ADCC, you got to think that that's going to give you a little bit of a confidence boost, right?
I'd imagine so.
I would hope so. Otherwise, man. But I think
if that's not going to work, nothing will.
I believe we've got a view into Marcelo's mind, a deep dive coming out very shortly. Reed, do you want to tease the audience here with what might be coming?
Yeah, absolutely.
This big reveal.
Yeah, absolutely. My DMs actually on Instagram are full of people calling me a liar.
What?
Because I posted that I did this Marcelo Garcia interview a long time ago, and we haven't released it yet, but it's coming. It is being released.
Just building up the anticipation.
Exactly, the anticipation, making sure you guys, are hip to it.
Well, on that note, we actually have a very special first look at this. Sure. We have the trailer for this landmark Marcelo Garcia interview. Let's roll the tape and listen to it very carefully and give you an idea of what to expect.
New York City, just wrapped up class, noon class, Marcelo.
It was good.
Yeah, I just have to say right off the top, thank you so much for the time. It's such a privilege to talk to you. Absolutely, especially here. We're just about 2 months away from ADCC, and I know for myself, and I think a lot of people out there, when they think of ADCC, they think of Marcelo Garcia. So thank you so much for giving us some time and talking to us about ADCC. It's a real privilege for me.
I really have the appreciation to have you guys here too, because it's good to be remembered. You know what I mean? Like, I put so much time on that, and then I don't want people to forget. When I say forget, like, not what I did for Jiu-Jitsu, but how much time I put on that, you know what I mean? And I really love everything I have done in Jiu-Jitsu. So. Jiu-Jitsu is something that I really appreciate and I love to talk about.
Yeah.
It's something that, I'm not baggy, but I really enjoy talking about Jiu-Jitsu.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much to talk about in your career. Absolutely.
It's a little tease. Little tease of what to expect.
Just the beginning. So about 2 hours, 2 hours long. Marcelo and I got to walk through a little bit of Midtown there. We kind of found a bench down in Midtown towards the Hudson, and sat down and just talked. And it was it was a lot of fun. It was a long conversation. So we kind of covered a lot of subjects, but mainly it focuses on ADCC. You know, I was really really excited, and you could hear in the clip where I obviously tried to. Give him some props, because when we think about ADCC, we do think of Marcelo, at least I do, and I think a lot of other people do. So it was just great to dive into 2003 the day before ADCC, he didn't even know he was going to compete, and then he went out the next day and beat Enzo Gracie, who was already a three-time ADCC champion. Talk about the ultimate underdog, or talk about the greatest debut in ADCC history. Let's not forget about Marcelo Garcia. He wasn't supposed to be there until the day before the event. I mean, going through some of that, a lot of this stuff I didn't even know. And so going through a lot of that and talking to him about some of his glory days competing, talking about some of his biggest lessons and his biggest advice on how to win the big tournament. It was an incredible privilege to talk to a legend like that. And I think we got some cool stuff on. I think you're going to really learn a lot about Marcelo, a lot about ADCC. It's a fun interview.
I am so excited, because I don't think there's ever been an interview as comprehensive as this. Certainly not as long as this. 2 hours inside the mind of Marcelo Garcia. That's a real privilege. But I got to say, it looks like you got to spend quite a lot of time with Marcelo. We saw you doing some rounds with Marcelo as well, and before you're heading out there. So he's still staying sharp on the mats, huh?
Man, he says it in the interview there. Like he says he still feels the fire to be a champion. He still feels like, you know, like he wants to win. He knows.
Whenever you're ready, Marcelo. Yeah. So are we.
He knows what that feeling is like, and it's a great feeling, right? To be a 5-time ADCC champion.
I don't know either. Got a question for you then, because, you know, it's one of those things everybody wants to know. You know, Marcelo's last match was in 2011. He has not competed since. That is 8 years ago. Do you think he'll ever come back?
You'll have to watch the interview to find out.
Do I ever think
he'll come back? You know, I think this is something we do talk about in the interview as well, for sure. And you know, Marcelo does have a long extended answer, so I definitely recommend you getting it straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, it's hard to do something like that justice, right?
Yeah,
it's such a deep topic.
But I will say yes.
Ooh.
Yes, yeah, I hope we're leaning towards it.
Yes.
I'm leaning towards, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously maybe crossing my fingers and then like really hoping, but like I said, man, he's a guy who, at his core, loves jiu-jitsu, and I think the competition is a big part of him and part of that. So,
when can people see this full interview? When's it going to go on the site?
I believe we are going to be live premiering it all day, or at least a good chunk of the day, next Wednesday. I believe is the day we're going to be premiering it on Flow Grappling. Of course, you can check it out there. We're going to be looping it throughout the day, hopefully. So if it's a bad time during the afternoon, hopefully you'll still be able to catch it at night. So
yeah. So Flow Grappling members, of course, will be able to watch it on the live stream during that period, and then we'll put the full thing up in its entirety that people can go in and watch that. And I can imagine it's gonna be something you're gonna have to watch again and again, because 2 hours is so much good stuff in that, right? But
there's a lot to digest for sure. That's one of the reasons why it's taken me so long to get it out there. It's 2 hours. There's a lot in there.
Wow, we got to do something like that justice, right? And I know that we can already see from the comments actually that people are really excited about it, I don't blame them, because this is not the kind of content. This is not the kind of interview that you see every day, is it? This is a special. It's a big deal.
Oh. Yeah, and Marcelo will be there. He'll be out there at ADCC, you know, what, coaching his guys and everything like that. So be able to, you know, relive some of his glory out there, hopefully.
Can't wait. Speaking of ADCC, we were chatting about this a little bit earlier, Reed, but I want to get your feelings on this as well, because we're talking about, like, you know, most anticipated matchups, dream matchups in any divisions. We were talking like just about 66 and 77 and stuff. But what about you? Are there any dream matches that you're looking forward to?
What'd you guys talk about?
Man, we talked about 66 and we talked about 77. We didn't really get into the other weight classes too much. But are there any absolute matches that you're particularly excited for, you know, hoping to see?
Man, I don't know if you guys said this one, but I'm gonna preach this one. And this is the most anticipated matchup of a generation, of a lifetime.
Okay.
No, I think that I'm hoping we get to see Buchecha versus Gordon Ryan. To me, that is the match at ADCC. You know, definitely obviously that'll be an absolute division match, you know, and I think both of these guys are among the best grapplers at the moment. And Buchecha, of course, has won just about everything there is to win. Gordon has won a lot, Nogi Worlds. He won ADCC. Of course, Buchecha has 2 ADCC titles as well.
And it would kind of answer all the critics and all the questions as well, right? One way or the other, it would answer those questions.
And there's one title that both of these guys do not have, and that is an ADCC absolute title. And believe me, both of these guys, it sounds like, you know, they want to win their weight class, yes, of course, but let's be real. The absolute division is where it's at. The ADCC absolute division is going to be fire this year. You're going to have the Atos guys in there too. You're going to have Cyborg in there, who proved once again that you cannot sleep on Cyborg.
No way.
And he's going to be gunning for that absolute title as well. Man, it is just like up in the air who is going to win that absolute title. And I cannot wait to see who meets in the finals there at the end.
We should see a little a difference in Buchecha's performance this time around as well, I think, because they're changing the format a touch for the finals ADCC this year, because historically what they've done is they always started with the lightest weight classes and work their way up. And what happens is when they've done with the finals, they take a short break and then they roll out the absolute division, right? They have like a super fight usually, and then they have the absolute. No super fight this year. But the break, it's not really enough for those guys, right? I mean, Buchecha was pushed around Orlando Sanchez for, what, 20, 30 minutes, and then he only has a short break before he's back in to do the absolute. That's a tough task. So they flipped it this year, and they're going to start the weight classes with the heaviest weight classes and work their way down, which hopefully should give him more time to recover. Because, I mean, frankly, he looked great up to a point, and then it was just nothing left, right? 2017, he looked exhausted, and of course, we saw Felipe Pena win by submission.
And, I mean, he had that war with Shanji in the quarterfinal, too, which is just like another...
One of my favorite ADCC matches.
He had a war with Orlando, and then he turned right around and had a war with Shanji, and then, yeah, had that match with Felipe. So, yeah, it is a very difficult thing to win, right? It is very difficult, and especially... Yeah, double gold. And you don't see a lot of people at ADCC winning double gold, to be honest. I'm not sure how many people have won double gold, because I know Drysdale lost in his weight class, right? I know Calasans lost in his weight class.
I think Galvao in 2011 might be the last guy to have done it, because Cyborg in 2013, he won absolute, lost in his weight class. Yeah. Calasans in 2015 didn't win his weight class.
Yeah.
2017, Gordon.
Silver medals could be.
Felipe didn't win his weight class, sorry.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So silver medals could be a good indication for. Absolute gold.
I think Braulio did double gold in 2009 as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. Lots of...
It's another great thing about ADCC is the rich history of it.
Yeah. Well, guys, unless there's anything else, I think we should wrap it up, because we got to go and crank out some more ADCC stuff for you guys, because there's not that much time left. It's like 4 weeks away, right?
It's around the corner.
4 weeks this weekend.
Can't believe it. Coming up quick, but I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. And we will see you again for another episode of Fistful of Collars, possibly next week, maybe week after. We'll figure it out. But stay tuned, because we've got, hopefully, we should have some more info about ADCC. You can break down some divisions and stuff when that comes around. See you again next time.